And he was like, "You have just fed a lamb to the wolves." He's like, "What have you done?" And it just, it grieved. And my grandparents prayed and prayed for me. So I was so grateful because so many people prayed for me and they never gave up. And even those that judged me, that kept sending me nasty letters and stuff and saying, you know, how can you live this way when you're a Christian? But I'm grateful now for those because they weren't afraid to speak the truth to me.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show. On behalf of Disciple of City, I'm Todd Carlton, and this is the Toddcast. My friends, we are doing a big evangelism push in Canada this year where we are going to see 100,000 Canadians hear the gospel. It's called the 100K Harvest and is happening in 26 different cities across the nation. For more information on this, how you can be equipped, how you can participate, and how you can download the app, go to our website at discipleofcity.ca. Thanks for listening and thanks for watching. Please subscribe and follow along to help get these great testimonies out there. And follow us along on Instagram at @Toddcast_DAC. And also, this shirt I'm wearing right here, friends, the United Hive app is a fantastic app that is all over the world where you can share testimonies of baptisms, salvations, deliverances, all the great encounters that you're having with video, pictures, and personal write-ups. So download the United Hive app today wherever you download apps. Friends, my guest today is residing in Vancouver in beautiful British Columbia. She has been a model in both Canada and Milan, a professional photographer, a worship leader, and is now the national director for Burn Canada and coordinating all the events for Sean Foyt's Let Us Worship tour this summer. Please welcome Nicola Shilton. Hey, friend.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good to see you this morning. Thank you. It's early for you over there to be getting up and hitting up a podcast.
It's awesome. Thanks.
Yeah. Glad to have you. Glad to have you on the show and just take this opportunity to get to know you a little bit better and hear your story.
Awesome.
Nicola.
Yeah. It's actually, you can say it Nicola. Yeah.
Nicola. Is that the actual proper way you say it?
That's the official. Yeah. Nicola.
Nicola. So, okay. Well, yeah. I guess that is how it's spelled, but it'll be Nikki for the rest of the show, right? Because that's.
Yeah, Nikki's best. Yeah.
Nikki's best. I don't have
to say it's Nicola. Nicola.
I like that, though. That's good, though. You need to correct people, right?
Yeah.
Hey, just Nikki, share your. Born and raised in Vancouver?
Actually, I was born in New West, and then a lot of my childhood was in Kelowna, and then up to Edmonton in Alberta, and then back to BC for the rest of my teenage years. And then I ended up in Milan, and then moved back here in my early 20s, and I've been here ever since.
Kelowna. Kelowna's awesome.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, lots of good memories there.
So when you grew up, were you like in a your family Christian? What was your faith background as a kid?
So I actually, on my dad's side, he was a pretty new Christian. But my mom came from a long line of evangelists and pastors and a lot of PAOC family. And so, yeah, I grew up in the church and with a lot of music in church. And so it was, a pretty neat childhood. My mom was doing a lot of music. So we do a lot of back in the 80s, those like Christmas productions and Easter productions and those like massive things we do. So yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Fun times. So when did you, Milan is pretty, that's some pretty serious, I don't know anything about modeling, but I know enough that when you hear that word or Paris and stuff, how did you get into modeling? How old were you?
I was actually 13 and I was really tall and I'm very gangly and awkward. And I was actually bullied severely in school and in high school, especially. And so I kind of got really frustrated. I was actually working in the movie industry as well. I did a lot of extra work because here in Vancouver, it's like, that's what you do. And my cousin was an actress, so got into that. And so I was on movie sets a lot. And this is going way back because like there were some pretty interesting names that I got to be a part of movies with. And so you get to know people at a totally different level when you're working on sets all the time. So I grew up on movie sets and they kept saying, you should model. And they were like, oh, you know, you're really pretty. And I was like, it's the exact opposite of what I was told in school, that, you know, you're ugly, you're awful. And so like, my family actually had to take me out of high school because I was getting threatened. Like the kids were going to slash my face and stuff. Like the bullying was really severe. Being a redhead in school is awful. And so I was like, I got mad and was like, I'm going to prove to everybody that I can be something. And so I really poured myself into modeling and did a lot of like runway here in BC. And so I was doing that 13 till I was 18. And plus I also did music and ministry at the same time. And then just kind of really was figuring out who I am. And then I actually was going to quit because I wanted to do mission work. I was going to work with kids in Philadelphia. And then I was given the opportunity to either do that or go to New York. And so I was 16. And so my family was like, you should go to New York because, you know, you've worked so hard to get here. So I went and it was awful. It was not a good experience. And I'm like, I'm done. And when I went back, I was like, still did a bit of modeling a bit. And then I was like, you know, Lord, if you want me to do this, I was going to go to college. And like, if you want me to stay in modeling, like have me go, cause I'd been interviewed to go to Milan. And if it's not your will, and if I have to buy my books and finish like getting all of my finances in place for college, then I know that I'm supposed to stay and not go to Italy. And then I didn't hear anything. I ended up with getting all my books, paid for my tuition, and I'm like, okay, I was really settled. And then I got the call and it was like, oh, you got the chance to go to Milan. And I was like, I remember I just started weeping on a payphone because there weren't cell phones back then. And I was like, I don't have peace about this. And my family actually pushed me and said, and it's one of the biggest regrets of my family's life that took place. And so they pushed me to go. They're like, you've worked so hard to get to this point. This is massive. It's huge to be able to go to Milan.
How old were you?
I was 18. 18. Yeah. And I just graduated. So
just, but before you share about that, I'm just curious, like that's some pretty serious bullying. I mean, you know, there's bullying and then there's crazy bullying where they're threatening to slash your face, which is awful.
How
did that affect your faith? Like, did you feel peace from God that God would protect you, or was it totally opposite? Did it like kind of not push you away from it, but like, how could this be?
It really made me draw into myself. And I, at that time, like I still hadn't really experienced the Lord the way I met him while I was a prodigal. And I was kind of a silent rebel, so I would just skip school. I did a year of correspondence. So I just kind of isolated myself, which was not healthy either. So I was not taught how to deal with those types of things emotionally. And so it was learning. I've learned so much now how to emotionally, regulate and like go to the Lord for things. But back then it was, you know, I just buried myself in other things, and I would do ministry. We were part of a Christian youth theater. So I just go and encourage other kids, and always, I was always the one advocating for everybody else. And so I would always push through that. And I did, like, I spent a lot of time with the Lord. Like, I loved the Lord, but I would just bury those feelings and just really push into more things, which created a very unhealthy pattern as I was growing into young adulthood. And which is probably why I went kind of AWOL once I was in Europe. And so, because I just had never dealt with the emotions and all of that trauma growing up. And
they didn't know what to do in the 80s, right? Other than pound people. That was the how you handled it, right? Or at least that's what they said.
Pretty much, yeah. Oh, and my brothers, yeah, all of us. Like, and my brothers were bullied too. We were all redheads, so we were just like. So then I became like the protector of my brothers who were going through school too, because I always ended up becoming the protector of others and the champion of others and making sure everybody else was okay. So
what about in church, like your church friends, your in youth and stuff like that, did they bully you too, or was that kind of like a safer space for you? Or
I didn't ever really fit in church either. And in the youth group. And so I was part of one youth group, but then there was some unhealthy things that I saw taking place, just what some things that the teacher or the pastors were teaching and that I didn't agree with. And so I stepped away. And what's beautiful in sharing these things, I just want to say, is that the power of forgiveness is incredible. And though there's so much pain that we walk through that the Lord takes us through, as like when we actually choose to forgive, like it is so freeing. And I think, like, for a number of years, I held on to a lot of that pain, which impacted my health. It impacted everything. And when I finally was able to, you know, really forgive these people, because the youth pastor, like, literally, he had, from what I was told from other youth, he had said, Nikki, you should not communicate with her anymore because she has walked away from the Lord because she left the church. And I see this pattern over and over again that took place. And again, they're just unhealthy patterns that people didn't understand. And the Lord is, that's why the Lord is healing his church, because there's so many people that walk out church hurt. And looking back, it's like amazing that I would even walk into a church even today, or that the Lord has me doing what I do, because there was so much pain from even the church. But I kind of buried myself in getting attention from men. So like I had a boyfriend when I was 14, and then I had like a couple boyfriends when I was 14. So I found my validation in the attention of men. And then that was kind of my safe place. I mean, they were all teenagers too. So they weren't exactly men back then. We were all young, but, looking back, and I've done a lot of soul healing too. Like there's been a lot I've walked through in dealing with past trauma. And I'd say I'm in a place now where I can say I'm fully healed. But it took years to even be able to talk about like how I walked out what I went through. So,
well, what about Milan? So you're you know, just to preface where you were at before you went there. So your parents encouraged you to go. You kind of didn't want to, like you say, you didn't feel peace. You didn't feel peace through the Lord through it or yourself. And what happened when you went over there?
So I didn't feel peace from the Lord. Because at that point I'm like, Lord, I'm dedicating my life to you. I want to follow your will. And he did give me the answer. I wasn't supposed to go. But then, I know my mom, she said that was one of the biggest regrets of her life, because when I went there, like I'd never been to a club, because I grew up Pentecostal. Like you don't drink, you don't do drugs, which is important. And you don't sleep with people. You don't do clubs. You don't do any of that. And so then I was like, and I went with my friend that she was a Mormon. And so she would do her prayers like every night in our little apartment that we had. And it actually, looking back, Yeah, there's a lot. Like you've opened a can of worms, my friend.
Well, what were you guys modeling clothes? Was it runway stuff? What was it that you were doing? And
so I went there thinking I'd be doing runway because I did runway here, and I'm 6'1", and they told me I was too tall when I was there. So I ended up doing a lot of catalog. But what happens, and this is back in the 90s, I've heard that it's changed a lot since then. It was a really bad industry back then. It was way, like looking back, because I've also worked with bringing human trafficking awareness, that they're, that I was basically trafficked for a time as well. And that really stunned me when I realized what was taking place, because they would have us, they would give us an allowance. We were only allowed that much. No matter how much we earned, we'd only get a certain amount to live off of. We had an apartment provided, and that was fine. But once you start to struggle, because there are thousands of girls coming into the city, all flooding the city to be able to get one job. And so I'd be in lineups with hundreds of girls for one job, and then they'd pick one person. And so there were so many girls that were struggling, starving, that did not have and when the agencies were done with them, they'd throw them out into the streets. So then I started bringing some of the girls into my apartment, which my roommates were upset about because it's a one bedroom apartment. But I'm like, my friend just got kicked out onto the streets. And I had another, a friend that, cause there's a lot of emotional abuse in that too. And abuse, like full blown abuse, but, I don't know if this is a PG awareness thing, but she had, I came home and she was in the corner sobbing, like traumatized. I'm like, what happened? And she said, you know, this photographer was telling her that she had, I'm like, how much do I share on a Christian show? that he was trying to convince her to stimulate herself so that he could get the right photos. And then he was telling her all this stuff. So she felt mentally raped by the time she was done the photo shoot. And so these things that I was experiencing, and I never experienced that with a photographer. I did have very negative experiences with a lot of people. What they don't tell you about in Milan is the club scene and the modeling scene are like enmeshed. And so I would see, because I started going to the clubs and I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I've never experienced this, little Pentecostal girl. You know, I had gone through a lot, and all of a sudden I'm getting all this attention from hundreds of men because I'm a model. And what they have is a PR group that goes in. They know where all the agencies are and where all the modeling houses are. And they would take you, like they show up at the apartments and say, hey, want to go for dinner? So and a lot of girls are starving. So they'd go for dinner because they didn't have enough money to survive on. And so this is the 90s, just to clarify. And they would go to the restaurant, but then you're obligated to go to the club, whichever club that this PR had come from. And so then, because that was the thing, you get paid in food, and then the pretty girls are then sent to the clubs.
They want you in the club, right?
Yeah, and it sucks you in. And so I ended up being, you know, one of those girls, and that wasn't making enough. And so I got sucked into that. And I did catalog. And what's really interesting was that the magazine covers and all of those, like there, it was so rare for that to happen, but they would only pay you like $100 for it. It wasn't even worth it to do the covers, even though it would give you more exposure. Catalog actually was a higher catalog, and all of the smaller magazines actually were paid more than the big names like Vogue and back then. And if you were an unknown model, to be on the covers was even more impossible because you weren't known. It was like you made it once you got onto there, even though they barely paid you anything. So yeah, it was very eye opening. And then when I was in the club scene, like I never drank. I found that my my validation started coming from so many men giving me attention. And that's when, like, I met somebody, and then he had seemed like a good person. And I went and did a shoot in Morocco for a commercial for a travel agency, and I got severe, I got typhoid and salmonella. And I almost died.
Both.
Yes. And the agency did not call my parents. They didn't tell anybody. I was only 18 at the time. And so he actually took care of me, and the agency just kept bringing me antibiotics, and I was really, really sick. And like huge sweat. So when I came back to Canada 6 months later, I still had typhoid and salmonella in my system. And so it was like, and then I thought, what a great idea. Let's bring this guy back with me to Canada to meet my family. And that did not go well.
At 18 years old?
I was 19 at that point. So yeah. I'm a June baby. So yeah. So this was like all this stuff just in the first few months took place, and it got really sick, and then came home, wanted to introduce culturally. It was a culture shock from, you know, Italy to Canada, and then went back to Italy. And 'cause I was in love, and then the agency was, yeah, there's a lot that took place. And one of the things in order to earn money to come back home, I also had to be involved in what was like to make extra money on the side. There was a group that like, oh, you can go to clubs and earn, you know, $100 a night, but it was called Dancing for Dollars. And so you got paid $100 to be in the clubs. And this is the trafficking part, where you are then taken to clubs all around Italy. And then you dance, and at first it was really innocent. But then it's like a rabbit hole that drags you down further. And so then the things started getting scarier. And then they're like, you need to wear these clothes. And this is like, you have to do this. And you have to do, yeah. So that was really hard. I remember one night just north of Rome, me and this girl were given these like really not nice clothes to wear. And I was like, laying there in this seedy little motel. They brought us in the dark, like we didn't even know where we were. And so we both had like a bed, two little beds and a sink. And I'm sure there were cockroaches everywhere. And 'cause it was just gross. And I remember us trying to sew the clothes together so it would actually like be stuff. And I just started crying. I'm like, Lord, what have I done? Like, why am I here? Why am I doing this? And that was the shift that started to take place in my heart. And yeah, so that was just oh my gosh, how long? That was 94. So that's going back a ways. So
like you called out to God in that moment, but like up into that, I mean, you said you didn't drink, so you were still in that environment and stuff, but where was your faith at in those? 'Cause obviously the way you're describing it, you're getting like sucked into it. Mm-hmm. Was your faith really strong, or were you just kind of going with it because of like you were naive to the industry, or were you like, did you feel like you were drifting away from the Lord, or what did that look like from a spiritual sense?
Well, I was drifting away from the Lord. I always told people I was a Christian, like that never stopped. But then people started challenging me about that, because they're like, if you say you're a Christian, like, why are you lying to your family? Because I didn't tell my family anything. I'm like, oh, everything's great. I also, my poor mother, I didn't come home on the airplane. I was supposed to come home, and I didn't get on the flight and stayed. I put my parents through hell. And that's when the whole church started praying for me. Everyone was like, Nikki's gone AWOL. I was like, I want to stay here. I'm somebody that is very content wherever I am. And I love to travel. And so I just, I put my family through the ringer, which is why I have a very tight leash on my kids. But, so, But I mean, like, they let me travel the world at, like, I was like, my first flight by myself was 16 to New York City. Like, I just, like, I'm like, nope, that ain't happening with my kids. But there's been a lot of forgiveness with my family too for allowing that to happen. And I remember when I went AWOL, I started getting messages from people, and I got angry because I had so many people judging me. And at that, by that point, like, I had, like, given myself to this person, and I thought I was going to marry him. And I just, like, the pain of that. And then, as well for my family was, like, devastating. 'Cause, you know, I'm a good Christian girl. Like, no one would have ever guessed in a million years I would be the one that would rebel in the family. And so, so for me, I was out to prove to everybody that they were wrong and that I could live my life and still be a Christian and go completely the opposite way of what the Lord is saying. And I just kind of shut God off at that point and just kept pursuing. 'Cause I was like, I went from, I love the Lord to how bad is it and how fast can I get there? And it was, yeah, it was not good. So, yeah. And I just, like, there's a lot of pain. And I think all that inner turmoil that I'd had just kind of blew up. And the moment I was getting validated by people that were outside of my family, I just gravitated to that. And looking back on it now, and yeah, it's pretty amazing. So
when you were in that CD hotel room with obviously really super skimpy clothes and stuff, and you said you called out to the Lord, was that like a pivotal moment for you, or was that just like
that was, you know, the beginning of a very long journey back? Because at that point my boyfriend was kind. When he came back from Canada, he was upset because my family was upset that I bring home somebody that, you know, that had taken advantage of me in their view. And so that was really hard. I put my family through the ringer. It was terrible. But they were so gracious and were so kind. But what was interesting, like, while I was there, like when I came back home that summer, so that was summer of 94, I actually got baptized just to prove to them that I was still a good Christian. And by the grace of God, he no longer, you know, zaps people when they do that, because I deserved lightning, because I went out and totally lived a different life. The same day that I was baptized, I went out and lived completely contradicting everything I had just said I had buried with God. And so, yeah, I was just out to prove to my family that they were wrong. And so then I got angry. And so then when I got back, my boyfriend was very angry. And then he started to lash out. And then his abusive side and his he was an alcoholic, which I didn't know. And he had been a former addict as well. And so he started using. And just more alcohol than anything else. He didn't do drugs anymore, but he was, like, just heavily drinking. And so then I suddenly was trapped in this relationship that was really dangerous that I couldn't get out of. And I was still trying to model. What really upset me when I was doing the modeling, they then sent me information to do the Dancing for Dollars because they wanted to take the commission for doing Dancing for Dollars. They didn't know I knew the group that they were referring me to because I've been working with them through the summer. And thank God I didn't go back to that, because I'd felt disgusted, like, so gross doing that. And then a year later, I went to a club and saw the girls, and they had gone from, you know, where it was just, you know, seedy to there. It was like they were all topless and dancing on cubes. And I saw my friend and I was just like, what are you doing? Like, what has happened? And she's like, I have to survive. This is how I survive. So it went from, you know, very innocent. And that's very much what trafficking does. Very innocent. They start you and then they take you down till you're trapped. And thank God I got out of it. I started to go to school And when I was there, and I began nannying and teaching kids English, because I was like, I cannot be a part of this industry. And especially if they're going to be sending girls out to do the dancing for dollars and to be doing that as well, because it's, they're just after money, and they'll use a person as much as they possibly can until they can't, and or throw them out on the street, right?
Yeah.
And so I was just like, I'm done with that. And I felt I'd seen too much. And I was like, and that's why the Lord like never wanted me in it in the first place. I remember my grandpa, my mom was so proud. She called him and she said, guess what? Nikki's going to Milan. And he was like, you have just fed a lamb to the wolves. He's like, what have you done? And it just, it grieved. And my grandparents prayed and prayed for me. So I was so grateful because so many people prayed for me and they never gave up. And even those that judged me, that kept sending me nasty letters and stuff and saying, you know, how can you live this way when you're a Christian? But I'm grateful now for those, because they weren't afraid to speak the truth to me. And it was those people that also spoke to me that really, really, like every single word somebody said to me, always, I kept it in my heart. And the Lord would bring it back to me. And I kept my Bible with me. Like I traveled everywhere with my Bible. And so I actually got connected with a Brazilian missionary church. So the first year was modeling. After that, I quit. I went to school. So I became fluent in Italian. I learned really quickly. I'd had teachers tell me when I was a kid that I was actually kicked out of high school as well, because I was told I'd never be able to learn. And I never fit in anywhere. I literally never fit in anywhere. And so I found a high school that helped me to graduate, which was amazing. Then I realized it was the teachers that were the issue, not me. And it was just, I learned differently. And then I was thriving. And then I was in Italy because my Spanish teacher literally told me, he said, I've come to the conclusion that you will never be capable of learning a second language. The moment I was in Italy and being able to be in an environment, I thrived, and I was like fluent in Italian within 2 years of being there. And I was just like, haha, you know, just all these little wins that the Lord said, you know, that he just kept redeeming things, that lies that people said about me that the Lord redeemed. And so I became a comessa, and that is somebody that works in a clothing store. So then I got to work with Max Mara, Stefanel, two really amazing clothing companies. Stefanel, I don't think is in existence anymore. They were kind of like Benetton back then, but a cheaper version. And so it was right down on Vittorio Emanuele, and that's the street, like just right by the Duomo. And I just loved it. Like I loved Italy. So then I was working, and I always told people I was a Christian. So one of my friends, she was from Brazil, that was working at the store, she's like, you know, my sister's a Christian, you should meet her, she's coming for my wedding. And so I was like, okay. And so then I went out for lunch with Renata, and she's like the best thing that ever happened to me. So we went out for lunch, and she just wanted to meet me because, you know, fellow Christian. And then after it came out that I was living with my boyfriend at that point, I remember her saying in her very strong Brazilian accent in Italian, and I'm translating it into English, but she's like, Nikki, what are you doing? She's like, you are not living your life for God. And she's like, and that was like, that was the slap in the spirit that I needed, like just to wake up. And she's like, what are you doing? And so then she was part of a little house church and called La Chiesa de Sabaot. And so they invited me into their church. So I was attending this little tiny Brazilian missionary church when I was allowed to go out, because I was barely allowed to go out because of the abusive relationship I was in. And then Yeah, so there was that part that was like the Lord slowly bringing me back. Like, he's so faithful. Like, when people say, you know, don't give up on praying, like, people were telling my family to stop praying for me because I was never coming home, because I was getting established. I had everything. Like, I had my home, I was traveling, I loved, you know, I was in like the ultimate thing. Nobody knew about the abuse I was going through. No one, except maybe my coworkers, because I'd have bruises on me and stuff, but they always stayed silent. And so
that sounds like a part of Christianity that should be called out. People are telling people to stop praying.
Yeah.
That's those people should be called out. Pray without ceasing. We're not supposed to stop praying. That's right. That's equally as not obedient.
Yeah, it's true. The Lord just, he has his own plans, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I'm like, I'm trying to keep this short. Sorry.
Well, so what eventually, obviously that was a pivotal moment, and that girl from Brazil, to be spiritually honest with you, right? But what then, how did you get away from the boyfriend that you're living with, and what brought you back to Canada?
Well, actually, I'm not sure. Well, everyone knows Brian Dirksen, but they did a production and he wrote music called Father's House. And I actually have, because it was his 30th anniversary. So just a little plug for that. But I was so excited when the CD came out, because I managed to come home to Canada to see family and on a vacation. And my mom was like, you need to come see this play. And so I went, and it was the story of how the Lord pursues his children, no matter how much they reject him, and how the Father loves. And then she sent me, this is how old I am, a tape cassette that didn't make it to me for quite a while. But at that point I was working like downtown Milan. And I got that. I had a friend that came over and stayed with me, and I watched her reading her Bible every day. And when she left, I was like, you know what? I wish I would be able to do that too. And she's like, just go for it. Just start from the beginning to end. And so I would sit on the subway on my way to work, listening to Father's House and reading my Bible from beginning to end. And it was in those moments, because that's the only time I had to myself that was private, that the Lord really started speaking to my heart, and how he was pursuing me and how he loved me. And that's how I started to understand how he moves through worship. And that was what started shifting my heart. And then just reading the word, and it is so true. Like, the word of the Lord just never comes back void. And it is always a seed that will be planted. And I remember, like, even when I told my family the lifestyle I was living, and then my mom had actually, like, the Lord had shown her, and she said, I know that that's what happened. And I thought she'd be shocked and freaking out. She's like, no, the Lord already showed us, and then we've been praying for you. And I was like, you can do that. You know, and I had no idea. There was like an army of people praying for me here in Canada. And so then in 97, my brother was graduating, and I'd never understood the prophetic at all before. And so I went, I was going to come home for his grad, but my plane ticket kept getting screwed up. And my parents were at a Bible study, and they said, you're going to know that Nikki's coming home for good because she's going to come home on Father's Day. And my dad said, like, he's like, that's ridiculous. Like, he literally said, that's ridiculous. She already has her plane ticket. She's coming on this date. Little did they know that I'm going through like a horrible time, because the Lord kept messing up my plane ticket so that I ended up having to come home on Father's Day. And so I called my parents at night saying, oh, my ticket got changed again, and I'm coming home on Father's Day. And so, like, little unbeknownst to me, everybody's freaking out here in Canada going, oh my gosh, like, God just said in this Bible study, you know, that she's going to come home for good because of all this. And so And then I come home and they're all trying to keep their cool, not freak me out. And so my mom started taking, she took me to a counseling center that I met this prophetic guy that his name is Guy, and I don't know where he is today, but he would follow wherever the Lord told him to go. He'd just go there and minister. And so he just showed up again at this counseling center. He walked into the room and he just like, he like his jaw dropped and he was like, looks at me and he's like, I've seen your eyes. And he had seen me being abused and my eyes weeping. And so he shared a bit and I'm like, oh my gosh, like how would anybody know that? I've never told a soul. And then it was like person after person kept having words for me while I was here. And I was like, at the point after the 2 weeks I was here, that I was expecting any random stranger to come up and read my mail, because that was how many people were giving me words. Like God was trying to get my attention so strongly. Like it was like massive billboards. Like it was just crazy. And I had never experienced the Lord in that way before. And I'm like, okay, you are very real. You exist. I cannot deny your existence. And he was saying, you need to come home. And I was like, no, I have my life in Italy. I said, but so I determined and didn't tell a soul except for one person, because she prayed for me the night before I went back to Italy. And she said, you know, I want to just pray for you, because I feel like you're about to make a really big decision and I need to pray for you. And so I said, you know, I'm going to be leaving my living situation when I come back to Italy, and I want to rededicate my life to Christ. And so I went back and everyone was like, oh, the prophetic word was wrong. She went back home. We give up. And so my parents had just bought, they had been saving money for my plane ticket, and just in case. So they went and bought a vacuum system for their house. and then that week I'm in, I'm sure I'm getting timelines wrong, but I show up in the airport and my boyfriend picks me up, and I literally blurted out, I've rededicated my life to Christ and I need to move out. And he just lost it. Like he went totally berserk. And so that week was like living in hell. And he was extremely abusive. He like strangled me, tried to drown me. Like there was a whole bunch of really awful things that happened. And then he called my parents, telling them because I hadn't told them yet that I was going to move out. And he said, you need to convince Nikki to stay with me because she's leaving. And so then they're like, oh my gosh, like this is, you know, the Lord is answering our prayers. So then they call me. He left to go to the seaside, because that's what we do in Italy. You go to the seaside for the weekend and come back to the city on the weekdays. And I was like, I just got back from vacation and I was like devastated over what was happening to me. And so I'm like, I'm just going to stay here and work, because I had a job and at Max Mara at the time. And so he left, and then my parents call me and they're like, we think you need to come home. And I was like, I don't know. That's not going to happen. I'm not coming home. My whole life is here. Like, I had my cat. I had turtles. I have a zoo. You can see my fish in the back. Like we have a zoo. And I always have had animals. And I was like, I've got like my whole life is here. I'm well established. And they're like, no, we think the Lord is saying that. They're like, pray about it and ask the Lord. And so then I was like, okay. And then I prayed about it. And I'm like, you know what? I need to go home. And they're like, your grandparents have saved up money for your plane ticket. So you don't have to worry about it. They're going to pay for your way home. And at that point I had also met my future husband, that he was friends with my brother, and I just met him like a few weeks before. So, and we were just good friends, and never in a million years would I have thought I'd marry him. And so he and my parents were walking me through the whole night, packing up whatever I could into garbage bags to leave. And then the Brazilian missionary church opened up their doors for me to stay with them. The pastor, who she's still there, Rosalyn, she they opened up their doors for me to stay in the church. And because at that point it had gone from a house church to an actual church, like warehouse. And so I literally took everything I could and left, went and stayed in the church. And then within 3 days, I'm leaving out a whole lot of stuff that happened because a lot happened in those 3 days. But I had a prophetic word again given to me that that I would needed to follow that narrow path, but that the Lord was going before me and he would be with me. And then my dad said, the worst thing that could happen now is that there'd be a plane strike. And then there was a plane strike. And so then the phone's ringing like crazy in the church in the middle of the night. And we're like, what is going on? And it was my family saying, there's one flight left to get out of the country. You need to get there because Heathrow is shutting down because I was flying into England. And so they literally took me and what I brought, one of my turtles, and it took me and my turtle and whatever I could carry in this taxi. And I remember as we're flying down, like it's super hot, and this white feather floats in and lands on my lap. And I was just like, oh, that's cool. So I kept that. I don't know where it is now, but I was like, that's really neat. And my mom had a picture of actually like an angel on top of the car that was like guarding me as I left. And so I literally got on the last flight out of Milan that was going to Heathrow. And then they had to divert the plane. And then they literally took me on the tarmac, like drove me out to the plane because I was the last person on. They didn't even check they took my garbage bags and stuff, like whatever I could carry in boxes, loaded me onto the plane and got me out of Milan. It was a very dramatic way to leave the country.
That's so, the good old 90s too.
Yeah. Right?
To have that happen.
Yeah, you'd never do that now.
No, so. Not a chance. Not a chance at all.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's a crazy time, but such a beautiful country too, right? Like the contrast of things, you know, the darkness of what it can be in the beauty of what Italy is too, right? With the seaside and everything. Nikki, I just we're winding down in our time a little bit. You do photography too. We'll leave that because you're still doing that. I don't know how you have time to do that, but you're still doing
that. I've had to stop because I'll do it a little bit, but I have to stop because like doing everything that I do now as a pastor and as a,
So we won't plug that at the end then.
No.
You're good. Okay. Cause it's still live. Your website is still live.
It is. It's still there. And I get people asking me to do stuff and I like it. It has to be really special to be able to do that. And it also like I was just in a car accident 5 years ago. That's a whole other long story. But just like how much the Lord's healed us. But photography has been really difficult to do since then as well because of the amount of physical exertion. And so I've had to be more careful and stuff that had an impact on how I do photography as well. So,
well, just wanted to talk a little bit about your role as National Director for Burn Canada. So, now we've had your assistant, Cassie Landon, has been on earlier this year. And of course, Sean came and shared all about Burn and stuff. But just wanted to talk to you about how, you now have a family, you're married, you have kids, like you've come out of this and you were talking earlier about just healing, the importance of healing. But just your role as Burn Canada, how, if you could just tell us a little bit about how that came about for you and, with everything that's happened in your past, what is the passion that fuels you, which we know is Jesus, right? But what is the passion that fuels you for this role?
Yeah, that's really neat. I will do my very best to keep this short. So people have told me I need to write a book because there's just so much that the Lord has done.
There's a lot of good detail in there and stuff.
Yeah.
But I will keep you short because this isn't a book.
Thank you. Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. So, yeah, so I was after like a lot of healing and from trauma and stuff, I became a worship leader back in 2014, and then was with Worship Central. I still am. They've just been on hold kind of in Canada for a bit. So just through COVID era. And then I met some other worship leaders through through a Worship Central school that we had here in Canada, and which was amazing. And so we kind of were together, and that all happened during COVID too. Like the school happened in 2019, and then we were doing a lot of it online, but we were writing music together. And so, I've known a lot of worship leaders. Like there's a whole, my other world is very much music. And so, during COVID was like, felt that the Lord called us to do worship outside regardless, because when you are somebody that has left everything behind to follow Jesus and have gone through hell to follow Jesus, and then people say you can't sing to Jesus, it brings a perspective that's a little different. And I was just, I felt so convicted that we had to continue worshiping. And I said to my husband, we went on a walk, and I said, I know we have to begin leading worship outside. And I said, I am as convicted as the day I knew I had to return to Canada, and that this was going to be a life-changing moment for me. And if I don't follow it, we are going to miss something that the Lord has. And so he said, he's like, I love you and I support you and whatever you feel called to do. He's also a musician, but he's like, I am not going to be on the stage with you because he has other endeavors that he's been focusing on, which is amazing in his healing journey. And so we decided to start meeting and doing outdoor worship, and we followed all those. We found loopholes with the government that we could be a choir outside practicing. And the Lord just started moving powerfully through that. And then people started asking us about Jesus, because everyone's going to parks because you're allowed to be in parks, and then they're hearing worship. And so then we got connected with Burn, because we wanted to be a part of a ministry that was, and Sean, be a part of a ministry that was willing to take those risks and step outside of the box to continue to do worship. And I had also been in school through Worship U, and that's where I had met Sean years before, like as one of the teachers. And I thought he was insane. And I was like, I will never do something that crazy. And I immediately heard the Lord say, never say never. I was like, oh, dang. And so I paid attention to what the Lord was doing through Sean's life after that. I followed him closely. And here we are today. But so for that, in continuing with Burn, we just kept being faithful, being obedient to where the Lord was sending us. And he'd send us to, like, we'd pray and I say, Lord, where do you want us to release worship? Because we really saw it as intercession. And so we would go places and hidden, like we're very hidden, and would just go wherever the Lord said to, without needing any type of, you know, audience or anything. But what was happening is people were asking about Jesus and wanted to know more, because when they heard the worship, they could feel something different happening in their hearts. And so it was just really beautiful. And that's when we came across Disciple of City and like all the amazing tools. And Francisco was like, who the heck are these people? And just like, and that was literally his first message was, why am I in this thread? Someone had invited him to come out to a worship thing we were doing in a hidden place in Nanaimo. And he's like, what is going on here? And I remember that so vividly. And now he's like a little brother to me. Like I love him and his family so much. So we were just faithfully doing what the Lord asked us to do. And then the national director approached me and he said, I've been called to lead an IHOP, a house of prayer in Calgary. And I feel the Lord has told me to step down as the national director. Would you take this position? And so I said, well, we prayed about it, but what had happened before, the Lord had said to me like 6 months earlier, he said, you need to take a step back from what you're doing as a worship leader in your church. And it was also very difficult for me at that time to do worship leading because of the brain injury that I had as well. So we went from COVID doing one day a week to three services in a day. And that was really difficult for me. And I was like, there has to be something more than just doing the 15-minute worship and being so exhausted by the end of doing three services back to back. And then the Lord was like, you need to take a step back from this. And so I obediently to the Lord said, okay, I'm going to let that go. And it was hard. Okay, we're good. So I go and it said yes to this role. And then I remember, Joe said to Sean, Nikki is, you know, this leader, I recommend her. And his thing was, I don't even know her. Why would you recommend someone I don't even know? And then the board in the States, like they met me, they interviewed me to see if I fit. And then I became the national director within 3 months. And so it was amazing to be able to take on this role. And then I immediately went into rebuilding Bern. And because the Lord told me that He wanted to build family. And so there was a shift that was taking place for Bern in Canada specifically. And then I was given the green light to make this a completely separate ministry here in Canada and with our own charity. And so that's all been in the works. And then I led the first Let Us Worship for Vancouver. And I was like blown away because I was like, the joke was, you know, 200 people might show up. And then there was 5,000. And I just stood on the stage like gobsmacked at what Jesus did and was like in tears the whole time because only God could have done this because there's no way in my weakness that this could have happened. And then last year we did three and like those are just little things like to me because like what the Lord is doing in our nation is so incredible. And I've been now able to travel all across the country and meet people and it's just been so powerful. And to see like the worship igniting across the nation. And now I get to mentor people. And I think because of all the things I've been through over the years, I am always somebody that will give people second chances and will just continue to like not give up on people and encourage them and lift them up. And what it has taught me is to love people well. And that is, that's me in a really tiny bitty nutshell.
Awesome. That's so good. Nikki, thanks for sharing your story. You shared some very vulnerable things, but that's really so important of your story of, you know, really coming full circle and having the Lord in your heart. So thank you for sharing that with us today.
Thank you.
Really appreciate that. And friends, so Nikki is overseeing all of this tour that's happening this summer, the Let Us Worship Tour, multiple locations across the country. You can go to burncanada.com to find out all those locations and check out one of the ones that are near you. So do that. And there's other facets to Bern Canada that you can check out at their website. It'll be in the description. Thanks to the Disciple of City staff. Thanks to Francisco Castro, my brother also, for being that connection that connected you guys to us. And so we're thankful for that. Thanks to all the Disciple of City staff, executive producer Caden Carlton, Toddcast Media Relations, Sheila Judy. And I just had one more question for you. As you're going about doing all the ministry and the ministry stuff that you're doing, if you happen to have a conversation with a young girl and found out that she was gung-ho into modeling and stuff like that, how would you give her some advice without trying to crush her dreams, but steer her some really decent advice in the Lord? What would you say to her?
I would really encourage her to pursue the Lord and understand who her identity is in Him, because a lot of the girls that go into this, it's validating a loss of identity, and because they have to be beautiful in order to be accepted. And there's a beauty in understanding who you are in the Lord and how He pursues us. That I discourage girls to go into it. And I'm like, you need to know who you are and they have the girls in there are so young, and they don't know who they are at that point. And then people are dictating who they are according to what they look like. And I saw too many things. And yeah, the Lord is the most important thing, because when our identity is in Him, it is amazing the doors that He opens for us that we could never have possibly hoped or dreamed for. And I'm living proof of that.
Amen. What a great word.
Thanks.
Thank you, Nikki. Thanks again for sharing. Really appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate you so much. Like, seriously, dude. Like, my fellow, I gotta add a little one of these in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're, you know, Gen X all the way, right?
Let's go. Look forward to seeing you soon, my friend.
Yes.
Thank you.
Take care.
That's a powerful story, friends. And really, it is. It's our identity. And we, even if we grow up in the faith, sometimes we get a taste of the world and we just chase our identity and other things. But really, it's Him. And friends, never stop praying. Whether someone grew up in the church or not, never stop praying for them, because God is pursuing them and He's calling His lost sheep back. Pray without ceasing, my friends.